Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare. All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up.
We just went out for breakfast.
Yes. That was fun.
Yeah.
Hi. I'm Diana.
I'm Erin.
And we're here doing King Lear after a very nice breakfast.
Yeah. I had eggs. No. I had.
But
I had Florentine Benedict.
And I had pancakes because it's a diner because, yeah.
It was really good. And I had a lot of coffee. So,
woo! So we did the whole fig. I don't know what the fuck. It's like I had wine for breakfast. I did not.
She didn't even have caffeinated tea. She had mint tea.
We did the whole big shebang scene, and now we're in the second scene. And so we had a little bit of the Gloucester family,
just a wee bit.
But now we're gonna have a big old chunk of the Gloucester family.
So it's so interesting in this play that the two families mirror each other the way that they do. Both fathers don't understand their children or know who their children are, even a little bit.
That's a statement on the nobility right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, think about it. Cordelia is Lear's favorite, but he doesn't know her.
Yeah.
Why is she his
favorite?
Not
even a little bit.
Like, he doesn't even know how her brain works at all. And same thing with Gloucester, though. He doesn't understand which of his two children is the smart one.
Yeah. He prefers Edgar only maybe because he's the legal child.
That's true.
And then later he learns to really value him for who he was and he imagined him to be.
Mm-hmm.
But he still sort of doesn't know him. And he won't know him till the very last, and we don't even get to see that happen.
Right. Well, but that's a spoiler.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
But here we're going to get a good insight into the bastard boy.
Mm.
Yeah.
We love his character.
Oh, he's so great. So interesting that through the play, too, that he and Lear never speak to each other.
What do you think that's about?
It's like, I think it's real yin and yang. It's real dark and light.
Mm.
That they never actually blend and cross paths.
Hmm. But who's dark, who's light?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just that was a metaphor for, like, they are very much polar opposites in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And they influence the play in their own particular way, right? They influence the storyline in their own particular way.
That's a paper idea right there.
Yeah, ding, ding, ding.
Compare and contrast.
Edmund and Lear. Yeah?
Yeah.
Hugely influential in their own ways, and they change the story in big, big ways.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I looked up Bastard.
Of course you did.
Of course I did, but that's because I have this great, awesome, huge book called Etymology.
Entomology is bugs. Yeah.
And so I had to look it up. And it comes from the old French fille de bast, which means pack saddle son. From like people like cowboys who sleep with their saddle as a pillow. So it's these kind of disreputable fellows.
Who even have a real pillow.
Yes. Who make, you know, children that they sort of leave behind.
Oh,
I get it.
It isn't so much that they sleep with their saddle as it is they go from place to place, leaving their seed,
yes,
as it were. Johnny Appleseed.
Yes. Johnny Appleseed, yes. Wow, that swung that in a whole different direction. Dang.
Woo!
Yeah. But they just go from place to place, leaving babies behind them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And led to this Middle English phrase, born in bastardy, like born from these pack mule people. And then there was a German version, Bankert, which is a child born on a bench. Dang. Or Low German, Mantelkind, which is a mantle child.
Mantle being a cloak, not like what's over your fireplace.
Right.
So it's like this almost cloak and dagger kind of thing, if a dagger is a penis. And, you know, so like, we're off in the corner.
Where does cloak and dagger come from?
Well, it's like sneakily killing someone.
I
right?
know. But underneath. I know. I'm curious as to the etymology of that phrase.
Don't worry. I'll get to it.
Okay, good. Excellent. Yeah.
And then it became a term of legal status, actually. So when we see bastard in the script, that's actually because in the courts, they had so-and-so the bastard. Like if you see in King John, you know, Philip the bastard. It's an actual term of legal status of an acknowledged natural child of a prince.
Well, natural, you know? Natural. Natural being not just of nature, because that is one way of looking at that, that you know, humans do what animals do. They rut and they, right, so there's a natural child. But natural in this context means from a non-married coupling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's the natural thing to do. You see a woman, you pull her skirts up, and you have at her. Yikes.
Johnny Appleseed.
Yikes. So William the Conqueror, who was the first Norman king of England.
Ireland.
You know, Battle of Hastings, took over the whole country, etc. He was actually known as William the Bastard.
Until he became William the Conqueror.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe he had to conquer so that he could get rid of that name.
Yeah.
Who knows? And then you'll see Edmund ask all these questions about his status. Now, the most boring rendition of that speech is for him to already know the answers. He doesn't.
He's asking for real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who is he asking?
The audience.
Yeah.
Because, and God.
Yeah.
Right? Gods.
Yeah. Gods. The general gods. But because he wants an answer. Otherwise, asking a question is stupid if you don't actually want an answer.
Right. It's not rhetoric.
Yeah. No.
No. He is seriously wounded by his place in the world and how his place has led people to treat him. And this is a great juxtaposition with Lear, right? Lear, born into his place, has been treated like this and can't understand how anyone else lives. And Edmund, in his place, has been born into this place and can't understand how anyone else lives.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, only the opposite sides of the coin. That goes back to the paper idea.
Two different ends of the spectrum. And so how do they, we were having a discussion in the diner about how does the twain meet, you know, right? The vast division in our country of people. How could they ever possibly to get together and agree on anything in the middle? Because there's such a huge wide gap.
But so here's the thing. This is where we didn't go when we were still in the diners. Yeah. That like the thing about human beings is that we all want the same thing.
Yeah.
We want to be accepted. We want to belong. We want to feel loved. We want to feel safe. And we want those we love to be safe. All people.
Yeah.
All people. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your politics. That's what we all want.
Yeah.
What happens when we think about how to get those things is where it gets crazy.
Yeah.
Because people have different ideas. And there's nothing wrong with having different ideas. It's that
my different ideas could never possibly admit your different ideas as any kind of solution.
Right. And how did we get there is the question.
Yeah.
I mean, for Lear and for Edmund, it's very clear how they got there. It's by birth that they've arrived where they are. And there is no other place for them to exist except Lear has to exist as king because that's how he was born, and Edmund has to exist as bastard because that's how he was born. The thing is, Lear thinks he gets to continue to exist in his way regardless of whether he is actually kinging or not.
Right.
Edmund doesn't, Lear doesn't have a choice either because we see what happens. He doesn't get to be Lear without being kinging.
He thinks it's just a matter of changing semantics.
Right, exactly. You know, but once you're...
And that he can,
That's what makes it a tragedy. I mean, aside from the fact that everybody dies. But like, you know, it's a tragic fault in our hero.
Yeah.
That he can't conceive of the fact that he's trapped as much as everybody else is trapped.
Right.
Yeah.
So then if we want to call Edmund a hero too, you know, in a dark way, different way.
He is our hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this first speech is so fucking fabulous. And like, I love this character so much. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so then he's the same way. There's a tragic flaw that he can't understand why he can't change the world and why the world doesn't change for him when he makes up his mind to change it.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's the tragedy.
Yeah.
Yep.
You'll see if you went through Othello with us that his language, Edmund's language in the beginning is very much like Iago's. Very coarse and sexually laced and, you know, it really a lot of disdain for the world in general and how it operates.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because Iago's very much like Edmund in that he is put in this position not by his choosing. He ends up where he ends up, not by his own choice. And he can't change it. Yeah. He can do all kinds of things, many machinations, but it doesn't change his status at all.
Yeah. Same for Edmund. Yeah.
Same for Edmund. And I also would like to say, just look at the names Edmund and Edgar.
I know. They're so close, right?
Not only are they close, but like if you didn't know this play and you had to say which is the gentler name, you'd say Edmund.
Yeah, I know.
Not Edgar.
I always thought that too and it gets confusing. Yeah.
You know, Edgar sounds like a fighter.
Yeah.
And he's not.
He's not.
So why did our friend Willie choose
those names?
There must be a reason.
Yeah. Maybe I'll look into that a little bit more.
Mm.
Be interesting.
Anyway.
He's a great shapeshifter, too, our friend Edmund, because he can shift immediately when somebody comes into the room to change his response, his language.
Mm-hmm. Very much
certainly
like
for his father, but also for Cornwall later, for Regan, you know, for Goneril. He changes his language. He changes his persona for them.
Well, he's learned.
To reflect them. Yeah.
Right. He's learned how to ingratiate himself.
Yeah.
Because he's had to.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we get to learn a little bit more about Gloucester in this scene and who he is. And Aaron already talked about he doesn't understand his children at all. We're going to meet his other son, but we only meet him really, really briefly.
Now.
So what do we get as a first impression of Edgar is interesting because we only have a few sentences to make up. And he's very gullible. He seems very gullible.
Yeah. Harold Bloom
says
Edgar's unplayable.
Yeah.
Maybe for next time I'll pull out my
and look at it
the invention of the human and remind myself why he feels that way. But
so here's the problem with pulling out my Harold Bloom. You can't just read a little piece of it. Like, I'm looking at it going, oh, I want to tell them this. Oh, I want to tell them that. And you don't want to hear me read Harold Bloom to you. But what he says about Edgar is in comparison to Edmund. It isn't just standing alone by itself. He says, many readers and auditors of Shakespeare become as dangerously enthralled by Edmund as they are by Iago. Yet Edgar, recalcitrant and repressed, actually is the larger enigma and is so difficult to play that I have never once seen a passable Edgar. That's what I was referring to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because he is unreal.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody else seems very real, but Edgar, not so much.
So in this scene, he immediately falls for his brother's opinion of a situation. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't question it so much. Like, if somebody told me so-and-so feels this way about you, I'd kind of want to go to that source first and say, hey, what's the deal? He doesn't go to his father and say, I heard you heard this about me. It's absolutely not true.
Mm-hmm. No, He just takes off.
Takes off. Gets scared. Yeah. So people in the nobility not really understanding each other, and Edmund is going to exploit that for his good.
Well, for his, in quotes, good, because things don't turn out well.
No.
It's a tragedy.
Right.
For everyone involved.
So here he comes with a big speech, and you just need to know also about this term nature. Mm-hmm. So nature can mean a number of things. Mother Nature, like our earth and the whole spirit that takes care of us there. But it's also our instincts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what we would do if we don't have rules. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, that goes right back to our discussion about religion at the diner this morning.
Yeah. What would we do
Benny,
if...
Benvolio's downstairs saying, nature, nature.
Because he's going to bring her up in the very first sentence. Yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Do it.
Okay, enter Edmund with a letter. And some scripts say, enter bastard. They don't even give him a name. Yeah. I mean, he's called a name by people, but his title in the script is bastard.
And what does that tell you right there?
Yeah.
Right there.
Yep.
If we were doing Commedia, that would be a very, you know...
particular character.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, he's in verse. Really important to know here.
He's in his own nature.
Yeah. Thou, nature, art my goddess. To thy law my services are bound. Wherefore should I stand in the plague of custom and permit the curiosity of nations to deprive me? For then I am some 12 or 14 moonshines lag of a brother. Why bastard? Okay, so he's got a couple questions.
Yeah, yeah. So right.
Thou nature art my goddess.
Mm-hmm. I follow the laws of
nature.
Nature.
Yeah.
And because I am a natural child.
Yeah. So if that's how I started, then that's how I continue. Mm-hmm. But some people, and I read this, thou nature art my goddess, to thy law my services are bound, say that he's saying that in a way of frustration and anger and upset. But I've always read it that he's like, yes, all right, since I don't have to obey the same rules that other people, fuck it.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I think it's up to the actor and director to make that decision, but that makes sense to me. I think he would have phrased it differently if he was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
My services are bound sounds like he is acquiescing, sounds like he is admitting, sounds like he is embracing rather than pushing against.
Embracing the laws of nature. Right,
right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he asks this question, like, where should I stand in the plague? Why? Wherefore is why? Why should I stand in the plague of custom? It means being bound by the trials of convention. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Customary things. And permit the curiosity of nations. That's the finicky distinctions of society.
To deprive me. So,
to keep me from having...
anything.
Yeah.
Why... does society look on me negatively for these finicky little reasons?
And why should I bother thinking that I'm hemmed in by their rules? I'm not going to be. Tough shit. And then the next question is, just because I'm a few months, you know, later, lag is later, behind, or younger than his other brother, mm-hmm. right? It's like, so what? So what?
I'm still my father's son.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter.
And I don't see any distinction.
So even
my father has claimed me. It would be a different thing if he didn't claim me.
Right. But also, I mean, this is interesting because the first question, for that I am some 12 or 14 moonshines lag of a brother, that's about being a younger son.
Yeah.
But then he goes on to say...
why bastard?
And a bastard and low.
Yeah.
So I would already be a second son, which is not a good position. That's
stupid. And
not going
to inherit.
Right. That's a stupid convention.
Yeah.
But then on top of the fact that I'm a second son, I'm also called bastard. And because I'm called bastard, I'm called lowly, near the ground.
Yeah.
Which is
the meaning of base.
Right.
Yeah?
So why? Why?
Why?
Why both of those things?
Why are these rules? Why are they rules? So those are real questions. Why bastard? Wherefore base?
Yep.
Why am I low? And then he compares himself to his brother. When my dimensions are as well compact, my mind as generous, and my shape as true as honest madam's issue. Why brand they us with baseness, bastardy? Base.
Right, so he's really investigating these words now. So he is as well-made as his brother.
Yeah.
As intelligent as his brother. And so why am I, when you compare me to my brother, who is born of his
lawful wedlock?
Yeah. Why am I then branded low with being lowly? And then bastardy, base is so interesting because it's like baseness, he says. And then it's like, wait a second.
Like he's exploring these words.
What
do
these words actually mean?
Yeah.
Like bastardy, I kind of get because that's a legal term, but base? Why am I
low? Yeah.
I have the same makeup as my brother. You know, I'm still made of my father.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's really like, wait a second.
Wrestling with this, yeah.
Well, how dare you people call me low?
Yeah. Yeah, and so these questions directly to the audience is almost challenging them. Like, do you agree?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, where are we standing here? Are you and I going to have a conversation, or are you in their camp? Right?
Ass cushions versus groundlings.
Oh, yeah. He can totally get the whole field of groundlings on his side because lots of them are bastards.
That's right.
I'm sure of it.
Yep.
Yeah, so he has a following and a posse right there.
Cheering him on.
Yep. Cheering him on, excited and loving his brand of language, which is great. And that's why I think he says, why brand they us?
Yes!
He's bringing in that generalization to assume a kinship with his audience.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. And I just noticed this word brand, too. That's a dangerous word,
right?
That
is a dangerous word.
It has this sense of, right?
Of pain.
Pain. Yeah. Yeah.
You guys know what a brand is, right? I don't have to explain
that. Right.
When you brand cattle.
Brand cattle. Sear it into your flesh.
Or that horrible cult. We've been talking a lot about cults today. The horrible cult where they branded them with that.
Yeah. Ugh. So why brand they us with base? With baseness? Bastardy? Base? Base? Who in this lusty stealth of nature take more composition and fierce quality than doth within a dull, stale, tired bed go to the creating a whole tribe of fops got between sleep and awake? Yeah, so he's like, we were created out of lust. Like, these two people really wanted each other.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we take more composition that's, like, strength of constitution. Because if these people were really fucking, they're making something much more interesting. So composition was actually a thing that they believed in Elizabethan times that when a child was conceived, that the man and the woman mingled their blood. They didn't know about sperm and all that shit. So they thought they mingled their blood to create a new thing. So he's like, they were excited. Their blood was up,
it's
man.
It's fierce.
Right?
Create a fierce creature from that kind of union.
Yeah. I got the best of the blood, right?
Yeah.
Rather than these people who are, I love, got between sleep and awake, is like, oh, it's that kind of sex where you're like, oh, turn over, poke you a couple times, and go back to sleep. Like, that, right. What the
but
fuck?
Dull, stale, tired bed.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm so bored with you. I'm just like,
I have
you
to do
turn
this
because
it's my duty.
Can't even look at your fucking face anymore.
Yeah.
And so creating a whole tribe of fops. Now, fops is an interesting word. So fops means fools.
But it also means dandies.
Yeah. Like, very flamboyant gay guys. Mm-hmm. And it also means, like, sort of a milquetoast, like a little sop of a person who's not very substantial.
Fierce and fops
are great antithesis.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So then he's going to turn to his own personal fop that he happens to know. Well then, legitimate Edgar, I must have your land.
I will have what you have.
What you have. So I will have what you have.
I will have what you, because I deserve it as much as you do.
Yep.
Fuck you. If not more.
Fuck you. And then he starts to explore this word legitimate, mm-hmm. because that's the other side of the coin. So if I'm the bastard, he's the legitimate son. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, but I love when he plays with this word.
Yeah.
Because
there's so many consonants in there.
So many consonants in that.
Chewy word.
And also this, legitimate Edgar. Ooh, he's...
Yeah. Our father's love is to the bastard Edmund as to the legitimate. Fine word, legitimate. Well, my legitimate, if this letter speed and my invention thrive, Edmund, the base, shall top the legitimate. I grow, I prosper, now gods, stand up for bastards.
And you know the groundlings went, woo!
For sure, yeah. So my legitimate, my own personal legitimate, the guy that I know, if this letter speed, this letter works, and my invention, invention is a great word because they used it to describe imagination also, mm-hmm. but it means his scheme. You know, if my scheme goes well, I shall top the legitimate.
No, that is ding, 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 ding.
I will fuck you. And top really means like missionary style, yeah, right?
I will be
on the top.
Yeah.
And you will be on the bottom.
Yeah.
I grow, I prosper. It's like he's almost like he's getting a hard-on from this. He's so excited.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then, now God, stand up for bastards. Stand up is like support, but it's also, you guys get a hard-on.
Yeah.
Get a hard-on for bastards, man. Yeah.
It's great. And the groundlings are going wild.
Shit.
Right?
Yeah.
And the ass
so
cushions
fun.
Are like,
they're like, oh, for God's sake, take the bastard off the stage.
And here comes his father.
Who's the nobleman?
Kent banished thus? And France in collar parted, and the king gone tonight, prescribed his power, confined to exhibition, all this done upon the gad? Edmund, how now? What news?
So he comes in talking to himself,
yeah.
kind of.
Yeah, France. He's in the middle of a thought. So
and
Kent's been banished.
Prose.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Why?
Well, he's uncomfortable. This is not how life is supposed to go.
Yeah.
Not at all. Kent's banished. He's the most loyal courtier, and he's banished.
Makes no sense.
France, who we need, has left in anger.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
It's one of your dicks,
though. It's not a dick. It's the thing you brought me home with the little white house.
Oh,
but
okay.
But I hit it with my nub. And the king, gone.
Gone.
Given away his power.
Out of his castle.
Yeah.
Weird.
And all this done upon the gad.
Upon the gad. Fun little phrase.
Right. Like in haste, right?
Impulsively. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gadfly.
Yeah. Yes, a gadfly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like one that's just like lazily flying around, changing direction.
And then he sees Edmund.
And he's like, okay,
whoops.
What's happening?
Right.
And the stage direction says Edmund quickly tucks away the letter. Just doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So please, your lordship, none.
Why so earnestly seek you to put up that letter?
Yeah, so you didn't need the stage direction because Gloucester tells you what he did.
Yeah.
So, Edmund, I know no news, my lord.
What paper were you reading?
Nothing, my lord. theme word, right? Watch in the script for wherever that word appears.
Nothing,
it's
my
not
lord.
By accident.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Meaning it's something that that's going to get someone in trouble.
Yep.
That's what it is. It's not nothing.
Gloucester. No. What needed then that terrible dispatch of it into your pocket? The quality of nothing hath not such need to hide itself. Let's see. Come. If it be nothing, I shall not need spectacles.
I beseech you, sir, pardon me. It is a letter from my brother that I have not all or read, and for so much as I have perused, I find it not fit for your o'erlooking.
Give me the letter, sir.
Yeah, can you imagine? He's like, I don't think it's, you should read it. How dare he tell his father he's not supposed to read something? I shall offend either to detain or give it. The contents, as in part I understand them, are to blame.
Let's see. Let's see.
I hope, for my brother's justification, he wrote this but as an essay or trial of my virtue.
Essay, as in science, test.
Yeah, as a test. So here's the letter.
Gloucester.
This policy and reverence of age makes the world bitter to the best of our times, keeps our fortunes from us, till our oldness cannot relish them. I begin to find an idle and fond bondage in the oppression of aged tyranny, who sways not as it hath power, but as it is suffered. Come to me, that of this I may speak more. If our father would sleep till I wakened him, you should enjoy half his revenue forever, and live the beloved of your brother, Edgar. Calling his father old, calling his father tyrannous, saying that they should get rid of him so that they can split his wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To begin with the words, this policy. Policy in Elizabethan English, the subtext on that is like it denoted craftiness, you know, like scheming.
It should still today.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So he's implying that these wily old men are making these rules just to keep us down and keep us from enjoying our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So he's making the comparison between, like, what would happen if old men turned over their money to their heirs a whole lot fucking sooner.
So that they could actually enjoy it before they too got old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is what is actually happening with Lear and his daughters right now, right? He's turning over his money before he's finished living.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see how that works, which is not well. Yeah.
And then
it's keeping us from the best of our times, which is our youth.
Mm-hmm.
We're not able to enjoy it while we're young. Idle and fond bondage, you know, it's useless and foolish, these old men, useless and foolish, who sway not as it hath power, but as it is suffered. So it's like they aren't in charge because they have power, but only because we put up with them.
We give them the power.
Yeah. So he's like, let's talk about this, and I'll give you half his money.
Right. And so he finishes reading the letter, and he says, conspiracy? Sleep till I waked him? You should enjoy half his revenue? My son Edgar, had he a hand to write this? A heart and brain to breed it in? When came you to this? Who brought it?
Yeah, I love the word breed.
Yeah.
That's also a buzzword that we keep hearing, right?
Yeah.
And Edmund, it was not brought me, my lord. There's the cunning of it. I found it thrown in at the casement of my closet.
The window in his private room.
Yep.
Gloucester, you know the character to be your brother's.
Good. So the problem is, you have never received a letter from him? You've never seen his handwriting? You're going to take it for granted that because it says Edgar, that it's his handwriting and you don't even know?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. So character's handwriting. If the matter were good, my lord, I durst swear it were his, but in respect of that, I would fain think it were not.
It is his?
Yeah, and fain is gladly. I would gladly believe that it wasn't. It is his hand, my lord, but I hope his heart is not in the contents.
Has he never before sounded you in this business?
It sounded just means questioned.
Right. Has he ever talked to you about this before?
Yeah. Never, my lord. But I have heard him oft maintain it to be fit that sons at perfect age and fathers declined, the father should be as ward to the son, and the son manage his revenue.
Oh, villain! Villain! His very opinion in the letter! Unnatural, detested, brutish villain! Worse than brutish! Go, sirrah, seek him. I'll apprehend him, abominable villain. Where is he?
Wow. Talk about turns on a dime.
Turns on a dime. Oops, I farted. I farted when I bent over.
That's okay. I'll do fine. So as ward to the son, ward was someone who was under legal protection. So it's like they should flip and the son should take over and, you know, the father would be his ward. And I love that he starts with unnatural. Wow. So like... Now it's almost sounding like to be natural is the good thing.
Right.
And the unnatural son who has now done this horrible thing or said this horrible thing is the villain.
Hmm.
Ghost Sarah is interesting too. That's usually used that for a servant.
Yeah.
I do not well know, my lord, if it shall please you to suspend your indignation against my brother till you can derive from him some better testimony of his intent, you should run a certain course. Where, if you violently proceed against him, mistaking his purpose, it would make a great gap in your own honor and shake in pieces the heart of his obedience. So, like, if you could just hang on a second. So, he's making it look like he's trying to temper Gloucester's mm-hmm. fury. You should run a certain course, which means you should have a safe process through this dilemma. But it's like a dog racing term, yeah? But otherwise, you're going to make a big mistake. So it's really interesting because Edmund tells the truth to his father and his brother. Right here, he's saying, yeah. If you proceed quickly, you're going to fuck this up. But
nobody.
They don't listen.
Nope.
No. It's going to make a great gap in your honor. It's going to be bad for your honor, and it's going to shake his heart. Yeah. I dare pawn down my life for him, that he hath writ this to feel my affection to your honor, and to no other pretense of danger. So he's just, it's a test, and this is not his intention. Pretense intention.
Pawn down is interesting, too.
Mm.
I dare pawn down my life.
I am a pawn. I'm nothing but a pawn in this whole scheme.
But did they use pawn in the way we do today? When you go to a pawn shop,
yeah,
I dare
pawn
down
on the line
yeah.
for some reward. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Gloucester, think you so?
If your honor judge it meet, I will place you where you shall hear us confer of this, and by an auricular assurance. I love that. It's like you can hear it with your own ears.
Yeah.
Have your satisfaction, and that without any further delay than this very evening.
Cannot be such a monster. Edmund, seek him out. Wind me.
Yeah, wind me.
Oh, wind me yeah. into him, I
Give
pray
me
you.
Some air, some breath of your the sound.
Okay.
Yeah.
Frame the business after your own wisdom. I would unstate myself to be in a due resolution.
So I would give away everything to have this resolved. So... Who cares about, then, the laws of people? If you just said you'd give everything to just make this, then why are you bequeathing everything to Edgar? Couldn't you just make it more fair? And it would all be fine.
He could, but that would be going against tradition and policy.
Yeah, policy.
Ooh. Right? It would be going against the way, this is just how we've always done things.
Yeah.
Question authority. Let's
right.
go.
And wind me into him means work your way into his confidence for my sake. Okay? Edmund, I will seek him, sir, presently. Convey the business as I shall find means and acquaint you withal.
These late eclipses in the sun and moon portend no good to us. That's a nature thing.
Yeah. And late. So apparently just before Shakespeare wrote this play, there was a whole series of eclipses. That people were like, oh my God, you know, because those were things that were unexplained
mm-hmm.
at the time, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Holy fuck, you know, the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. That whole like, holy shit, the sun is going out. Can you imagine if you didn't know
no.
what that was about?
Yeah.
How fucking scary. And we're in an eclipse portal right now, actually.
We are indeed, and
yes.
it is fucking with shit.
Fucking with so much shit.
Okay.
So it's a bad omen. The
right.
eclipses are a bad omen.
Yep. Though the wisdom of nature can reason it thus and thus, yet nature finds itself scourged by the sequent effects. Love cools, friendship falls off, brothers divide in cities, mutinies in countries, discord in palaces. Treason, and the bond cracked twixt son and father. This villain of mine comes under the prediction. There's son against father. The king falls from bias of nature. There's father against child. We have seen the best of our time. Machinations, hollowness. You want me to stop?
I was going to say, I want to stop there.
Yeah, okay.
So though the wisdom of nature is actually science. So, like, science can give us reasons for these things, right? But nature, we have this word nature throughout this scene, used in different ways. There's a good little essay idea, a little short one. How is the word nature used in Act 1, Scene 2 of King Lear?
By different characters, because they use it very differently.
Yeah, very differently. Scourged is another. So we had brand, now we have scourged, right? Whipped. Yeah, by the subsequent effects, the resulting effects. And then these are the things that happen. Mm-hmm. Love cools. Where do we have an example of that in the previous scene? A number of them.
Well, right? What I think is burgundy.
Oh, yeah.
And Cordelia.
Yeah. And then Lear's love to Kent, right? Yeah. Yeah. Friendship falls off. Well, that's Lear and Kent for sure. Mm-hmm. Brothers divide. That's these two right now. And then mutiny. We have riots in the cities. We have unhappiness in the country. Treason in the palace. Mm-hmm. And then now this.
And this villain of mine.
Yeah.
Comes an example. The oh boy, oh boy,
and
oh
king
boy.
King falls from bias of nature. That means he reacts contrary to what usually should happen between a father and a child. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've seen the best of our times.
It's just going to get worse from here.
Edgar's letter said something about the best of our time.
Yep.
Also.
Machinations, hollowness, treachery, and all ruinous disorders follow us disquietly to our graves. Find out this villain, Edmund. It shall lose thee nothing. Do it carefully. And the noble and true-hearted Kent banished? His offense, honesty. 'Tis strange.
Yeah. So he's really kind of going back and forth.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Really
confused. His brain is glitching.
Yeah.
This is not how life goes.
Yeah. Not okay.
Not okay.
Yeah. And Edmund watches him go out, and then he's like, turns back to the audience, can you believe this shit?
And here we go with this word again.
Yeah. This is the excellent foppery of the world, that when we are sick in fortune, we make guilty of our disasters the sun, the moon, and stars, as if we were villains by necessity, fools by heavenly compulsion, knaves, thieves, and treachers by spherical predominance, drunkards, liars, and adulterers by an enforced obedience of planetary influence, and all that we are evil in by a divine thrusting on.
But you,
that was one sentence, by the way.
Yeah, right. Right, one thought.
Right.
One thought. But yes, right, he's saying we blame our bad behavior on the planets.
On whatever.
We're
right? Yeah.
We're and forced to behave certain ways because of astrology?
Yeah. Fuck that.
Fuck that.
And especially for himself. Like, I was born at a certain time, and so people tell me I'm a certain thing. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the excellent foppery. We have the word again, foolishness. When we are sick in fortune, meaning we're downtrodden by fortune, treacherous traitors, spherical. So let's talk about the spheres.
Yeah.
So the Elizabethans believed that each heavenly body, a planet or star or whatever, was embedded into a glass sphere in the heavens. And that's how it rotated, as if this sphere, this ball, was just moving in the heavens, but that each of these spheres were contained inside of each other like a Russian nesting doll, you know?
Didn't they also have tones that were associated with them?
Yeah. So it's like crystal. It's like when you lick your finger and you rub the side of a crystal goblet and it makes these beautiful sounds. That's what they believed was happening out in the heavens, that if you were blessed enough to go to heaven, that you would hear this song. Mm-hmm. The song, the music of the spheres. Oh my God, I bet it's glorious. But so spherical predominance, meaning like one planet being ascendant and more important than another. And then we have adulterers, and that is very specific.
To his father.
To his father, who just went out the room. Mm-hmm. That's his own personal, private, hellish adulterer who created the mess that he's in now. Enforced obedience has the sense of, you know, sex, like, ugly sex where someone's being pressed face down into a table. like the way his mother might have been. Who knows? Divine thrusting on. The gods are fucking with us. Oh, and then sentence number two. An admirable evasion of whore master man to lay his goatish disposition to the charge of a star. That's definitely personal.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. The whore master man is his father. who has a goatish disposition, which is like lecherous, nasty. He bends the serving wenches over the tables and just, yeah.
And then blames it on.
And then blames it on them.
The stars.
They came saucily into the world. Like it wasn't your fault at all. And then I love this repetition of sounds. Charge, star. It's almost like, rawr, 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 like he's growling.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to talk about his own. What was in the heavens when I was born? My father compounded with my mother under the dragon's tail. And my nativity was under Ursa Major. So that it follows, I am rough and lecherous. Fuck. I should have been that I am, had the maidenliest star in the firmament twinkled on my bastardizing.
Well, okay, so I love compounded.
Yeah.
What, I mean, when you hear that word in reference to sex, what do you imagine happening?
That's some serious pounding.
That's some serious pounding.
Yeah.
Right?
It's compounding.
Compounding. Yes, indeed.
So he's like... Yeah, yeah. So when they fucked, there was this star in the heaven, the dragon, whatever, constellation. And when I was born, it was Ursa Major. It's the Big Dipper, right? Mm-hmm. So that's supposed to dictate...
Or the Big Bear, Ursa Major.
Yeah. That's supposed to dictate that I'm rough and lecherous.
And then I love faux.
Which is
fuck. And I would have been who I am regardless of what motherfucking star I was born under.
Yeah.
The
maideniest,
sweetest,
most chaste little star.
I still
could have been up there.
This.
Yep. Fuck that. Yeah. And then enter Edgar. And then this is sort of an aside, but, you know, maybe Edgar's reading a book. He doesn't hear it. Whatever. Pat he comes. Like the catastrophe of the old comedy. Catastrophe is just the event that resolves the plot in the old comedies. And then he's going to talk about himself as an actor now. My cue is villainous melancholy with a sigh like Tom of Bedlam.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, we'll
ding,
talk about
ding.
Him in a minute. Oh, these eclipses do portend these divisions. Fa, sol, la, mi. So weird. What are you doing?
Well, he's, you know, being Tom of Bedlam.
Tom of Bedlam. Who's Tom of Bedlam?
Well, he's a lunatic. Beggar?
Yeah.
And we're going to...
talk about him more in Act 4.
Yeah, a lot
for
more.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was a particular type of beggar who actually was released partly cured...
In quotes.
In quotes. From the mental hospital with a license for begging. So they had a special little medal that they wore... that said that they could beg in this certain area.
Oh my God, I never heard that.
Yeah. And so one beggar could see the license of another and be like, you can't beg here!
This is my block!
This is my block!
Get the fuck out!
Yeah.
Faso la mi!
Faso la mi!
And Edgar, how now, Brother Edmund? What serious contemplation are you in?
He's like joking with him, like, why are you singing? What's going on? I am thinking, brother, of a prediction I read this other day. What should follow these eclipses?
Do you busy yourself with that?
I promise you, the effects he writes of succeed unhappily. When saw you my father last?
The night gone by.
Spake you with him?
Aye, 2 hours together.
Parted you in good terms? Found you no displeasure in him?
None at all.
Bethink yourself wherein you may have offended him. Yeah. So notice
setting
brother,
it up.
Brother, right? Mm-hmm. Edgar says, brother, Edmund, and he immediately replies, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's setting him up. And, you know, this eclipse, it's bad.
And Edgar's like, what are you kidding
what
me?
The fuck? Yeah. And then he's like, you must have done something bad to Dad. You in trouble.
It's so interesting because Edgar comes in as if he hasn't a care in the world, and he also turns on a dime.
Here we go. Let's see. Bethink yourself wherein you may have offended him, and at my entreaty forbear his presence till some little time hath qualified the heat of his displeasure, which at this instant so rageth in him that with the mischief of your person it would scarcely allay.
Some villain hath done me wrong.
That's my fear. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah,
I guess
maybe.
So forbear his avoid him. Till hath qualified, hath moderated, you know. So we gotta
till he calms
sure
down.
He's gotta calm down, because right now he wants the mischief of your person, which is some kind of injury. Mm. Mischief is injury, and I love that's my fear. So again, he's speaking truth. It's like, yeah, some villain did. I wonder which villain that could be. And then he's like trying to tell Edgar to calm down a little, right? I pray you have a continent forbearance till the speed of his rage goes slower, and, as I say, retire with me to my lodging, from whence I will fitly bring you to hear my lord speak. Pray ye go. There's my key. If you do stir abroad, go armed.
Whoa! Like, I'm just gonna throw that in at the end.
Yeah.
Don't go out without your knife.
Weapon.
Yeah. Because you're gonna need it.
Yikes.
But continent forbearance.
Yeah. Restrained. Yeah, but I love cunt. Continent.
But also incontinent.
Yeah. Like,
peeing yourself.
Don't crap yourself.
Yeah, right.
Just calm down and we'll make this happen at the right time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to bring you where you can hear him. And so this whole auditory thing that he's setting up, you're going to be able to hear something. It's like Iago with the handkerchief scene. He speaks quietly to Bianca, to Cassio of Bianca, and then Cassio answers in a way that Othello hears Desdemona being spoken of.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing's going to happen here.
Yeah. Armed, brother.
Brother, I advise you to the best. So we got the brother again as a bracket. I am no honest man, if there be any good meaning toward you.
He's telling the truth.
Truth! I have told you what I have seen and heard but faintly, nothing like the image and horror of it. Pray you away.
Shall I hear from you anon?
I do serve you in this business. And he goes running out.
Yikes! Gotta find my sword and run!
Yeah, yeah, my sword, yikes. So image and horror, the true likeness of it, I was painting a very calm picture of it.
Right. I wasn't really embellishing it with any kind of...
But it's ugly.
It's ugly.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then he goes back to verse.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting. So they were in prose from the time Gloucester came in the whole time. And now he's back to verse. A credulous father and a brother noble, whose nature is so far from doing harms that he suspects none, on whose foolish honesty my practices ride easy. I see the business. Let me, if not by birth, have lands by wit. All with me's meat that I can fashion fit.
Mm-hmm.
Me's meat, fashion fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And rhyming couplet. So there's a lot in that last two lines.
Yeah. Let me, if not by birth. So I can figure out how to have land and money with my wit.
Yep.
Because
me's meat.
Because I have these tools, this incredible thing. My father, who believes everything, credulous.
And my brother's so noble. He doesn't believe a bad thing about anybody.
Yeah, I even told him I'm no honest man, and he doesn't go to that conclusion. Amazing. Okay, well, the Gloucester family's fucked up.
Just not anybody in this play who not fucked up.
Yeah.
You know? Well, maybe the Prince of France.
Yes.
King of France.
And Kent, but he's, you know, like a puppy dog that he doesn't understand how the world works.
And the fool.
And he thinks he can be a good guy and that everyone will be good.
Right. He's deluded.
That's very sad. He's delusional. Kent,
no,
buddy.
Kent.
No, that's not how it works.
Just.
Nope.
Yeah. All right, well.
There you have it.
The Gloucesters.
Yeah, the Gloucesters. And then back to Lear we'll go. Back to Goneril next scene. Yes.
My girl.
Your girl.
I proved to you she's not bad. I proved to you.
Okay, we'll try.
I don't have to try. I already know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm Erin.
And I'm Diana.
And this was...
And this has been...
Fuck the Gloucesters.
Fuck the Gloucesters.
Fuck the Gloucesters.
The Gloucesters be fucked. God damn it.
Stand up for Bastard.
Yeah!
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.